in common? What is in common between these two things, these two pictures, these two institutions, the Democratic Party, the Republican Party? Well, they both are for charter schools, the elites. Now, are there any Democrats that oppose charter schools? Yes, they are. Yes, there are. For example, the mayor of Boston, who normally supports charter schools, didn't like this particular charter school referendum. So it might have been he was sensing the political winds, which were blowing, thank goodness, way against expanding the cap on charter schools, way against question two, despite all the money from the Bill Gateses and the Koch brothers and all that. And it was like 60-something percent voted against lifting the cap on charter schools. They voted no. And Socialist Alternative in the Worcester area, affiliated to the Vote No campaign, we did some work on that. People encouraging people to vote no. People voted no. It was actually absolutely brilliant. Obviously overshadowed by Trump's victory. But so-called victory, I have to always qualify that because he did not win the popular vote, remember. And so question two was resoundingly defeated. And then I went back to some of the liberal spokespeople like Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan and others. What's their reaction then to the defeat of question two? You know, and they were all, or this guy John Kelleher on WBZ radio, this conservative a real idiot, actually, John Kelleher, kind of a very virulently anti-union and so on, and trying to figure out, so what are they going to say now? They got their butts handed to them with that vote, you know? And of course, there was no, like, oh, we got it wrong, we suck, and we're tools for the corporations, we're corporate media whores. None of that. It was like, oh, well, I don't think people really understood it properly. And, you know, they went back, they fell back on some of their arguments. They made a few contrite remarks, but it's mostly like reporting on already these finance capitalists and others regrouping with their money. They're going to go at it again. You know they are. They're going at it hard in other states to privatize education, to kill off unions, and to ultimately have those educated that they want educated, like it used to be in this country, and everybody else not educated. You know, everybody else just educated enough to control them and to do certain menial jobs. But most people, they've figured out they don't need that many educated people. And then a lot of educated people without anything to do or without any way to do it in a way they can make a decent living is actually a danger to the system. We've seen that in other countries where a strong reformist, maybe social democratic, maybe even socialist government gets the power and starts making reforms for education and makes education available to the masses for the first time, masses of people. And then subsequent cutbacks by, you know, more conservative regimes create the situation where, oh, we've graduated a generation or two of fairly well-educated in terms of capitalism, which is a very low baseline, but fairly well-educated population in terms of the severe limitations of capitalism. In terms of education, and therefore, wow, that's interesting. And now they can't find jobs. And there's, like in France, for example, very high unemployment and so on, other countries. And that creates protesters and people that are questioning the system that have had a glimpse into ruling class education, into bourgeois education, that have maybe gained some communication skills or whatever that they can then use, and that creates a very potent enemy for the ruling class. And it's not that simple, because there's all sorts of political movements vying for attention of those educated people, and they get involved in. It can be nationalist movements or some parts of the world, even religious-based movements and so on, to again, have that kind of protest vote or that kind of whatever against the regime. If there's not a democratic socialist or revolutionary socialist option on offer, and big, you know, the corporate world internationally has done all that it can to bury socialism, the costs are that often so-called alternatives are not really progressive, not really left-wing, not really socialist, and they'll come up still challenging using the discontent in society. That's another point about Trump. I mean, there are people losing their bottle, as the British say, over Trump getting elected, as if they never heard of Ronald Reagan, as if they never heard of Sarkozy in France or Berlusconi in Italy or Le Pen right now in France, who's even worse than Trump, or that right-winger in the Netherlands. You know, I mean, Trump is horrible. You don't need to minimize Trump's potential effects on people, the Trump administration's potential effects on people, or Trump's complete ignorance and just existence as a capitalist as an affront to everything working people should care about. And yet, acknowledging all that, there are other Trumps. The system, you know, barfs up Trumps all the time. It's the ruling class is filled with Trumps, you know. There's no mystery there. That is there. Yes, the ruling class is racist, venal, greedy, ignorant. That's why they hire other people to do their thinking. You know, that's why they hire people to figure out the finances of their companies and to do the engineering and to do everything down to cleaning the offices, because they don't do anything. The ruling class does not work. I mean, one of the worst things about the election period is not only the liberals that shift unknowingly, unconsciously to the right to defend their corporate candidate, Clinton, but to have out of the woodwork climb, you know, people, and some of them don't know any better. I'm not trying to condemn, you know, everyone that voted for Trump. Well, I am. Okay, I condemn everyone that voted for Trump at a certain level. But, you know, again, in terms of racism, in terms of ignoring racial issues, in terms of voting against class interests, against our interests as working people. Yes, I condemn all that, obviously. But we still are faced with the fact that we want to build a mass movement against Trump. And that will include engaging some Trump supporters and trying to win them over, win them away from racism, win them away from voting against their interests and hurting other working class people by voting for a capitalist, voting for a rich idiot that cares mostly about his own wealth and the wealth of his class, his capitalist class. So yeah, in that sense, that's a condemnation and so on. But what I'm getting at now is the need to engage even Trump supporters, obviously, the need to engage them politically, win them away from racism, win them away from supporting capitalist policies. And that's not just done through argumentation, it's done through common struggle on demands and so on. I have no doubt that I'll be on a picket line one of these days, or at a community rally of some sort, and there'll be a few Trump supporters there, you know, even in Massachusetts. And I hope they learn from it. I hope they learn from it. And I'm confident some of them will. And we have a duty as revolutionary socialists to engage with those people in order to try to achieve maximum working class unity, you know. And by the way, I'm not talking about the unity they're talking about in the corporate media now, which is a joke. They want people to unify behind Trump. They want people to unify behind the ruling class, the capitalist class, that aren't in the capitalist class. Capitalist class is tiny, very, very tiny, less than 1%, actually. And they want us, the average person, to unify with them. No, even if we wanted to, even if we pretend to, you can ignore, as most Americans do, the existence or not be aware of the existence of something called the class war, right? The contending, the constant contention between classes, social classes, for what's in there. What they need, basically, even if they don't think it's in their best interest, you know. Like there was one Trump guy that showed up in the Worcester rally we organized over 400 people against Trump, and this guy kept saying the following phrase: "The market will sort it out. The market will sort it out. The free market will sort it out." Because there were a couple people trying to talk to him, you know, and I was listening in on some of it. So, well, the market will sort that out. Yeah, well. Yeah, the market sorts things out temporarily. It's very volatile, first of all. The market, capitalism, is very vulnerable, it is vulnerable, actually, to a concerted socialist challenge, but it is also a variable thing. It's a thing that's fairly unpredictable in a lot of ways in terms of when a crisis will hit, but what is predictable is a crisis will hit. What is predictable is that wealth gathering at one end of the spectrum will result in most of the spectrum with less wealth. Well, you know, all the things that, you know, were talked about way back at the beginning of the socialist movement, people like Marx and others analyzing the nature of capitalism and seeing that it's a system based on the exploitation of human labor, and human resource, I'm saying natural resources, for the pursuit of individual profit, right? And you, it gets to the point where there is social production on a vast scale, making all sorts of commodities and goods and services and so on, but still being controlled on an individual basis. Social production versus individual ownership. Social production of on a world scale versus nation states still, and the use of nation states to promote policies like trade policies and military policies that will enhance whatever capitalists control that state, that government, and et cetera, et cetera. So it's like this situation where, yeah, the market will sort stuff out to the detriment of working class people, to the detriment of the environment, even to the detriment of capitalism itself. The contradictions of capitalism are built into its foundations. It's always been an unstable system, one that needs to be overthrown as soon as possible. And we need democratic socialism. We need production planned democratically on a local, regional, national, international level for what can be built and produced and distributed, what goods and services can be produced and distributed on a sustainable basis for human need, not for the greed of the 1% or less that only produce if a profit is going to also come out of it, right? You don't produce anything under capitalism unless a government is producing it, and even then it could be a government control doing, you know, being used by corporations to, you know, the government produces it, but the corporations get the benefits and the profits. But normal production under capitalism, corporate production, only if there's a path seen to realizing a profit at the end of that production, and selling things rather than distributing things based on people's needs. This is all a horror show that creates all sorts of things in its attempt to control and maintain itself, creates extreme repression, racism, sexism, etc., and creates poverty, environmental degradation to the point where now people are talking about, with global warming, how much longer can humans actually survive, and what the destruction will be in the meantime. Creates wars to the point where they're so destructive they could destroy the planet. Yes, we're not out of the woods yet with nuclear weapons, not at all. Proliferation of nuclear weapons is more dangerous than ever because of the technology involved, et cetera, et cetera. So all this gloom and doom that Trump will exacerbate, and that people that voted for Trump were hugely mistaken, hugely misled. I believe in taking people up on that straight up. Say, you know, even if they come up with economic arguments and say, well, I just wanted a change. And I've run into people like that. I said, well, it's a change that's going to be a change that would probably be worse for working people unless there are mass movements to stop that and turn it around. And you get some of that. I mean, there was a certain, you know, F stuff up vote. I can't say it on the radio. And again, saying you understand that in an analysis is not condoning it or saying it was valid in some way. It's just like, yeah, it was there. That was there. But, and that is a price to pay, unfortunately, as long as we don't have a alternative political party representing working people and youth. The so-called protest vote, the so-called F the system up vote, will then go to either the Republicans or the Democrats, and both of them are part of the system. So you're not doing anything. You're not screwing anything up. You're really just reinforcing the capitalist economy and the repression that goes along with it. You're reinforcing the control of the big corporations over politics, etc. So by that angle, please understand that also a vote for Clinton is a mistaken vote. You know, and is a vote for Clinton an explicitly racist vote, like many of the votes for Trump were, or is it a explicitly pro-capitalist vote? I would say that there were many Clinton voters that are as insensitive to racial issues as, in fact, Trump voters were. that are insensitive to that sort of thing. I would argue that, yes, because of Clinton's support for capitalism and the system, and especially in terms of foreign policy, which we call U.S. imperialism here on the show, that is, unfortunately, you voted for a very conservative candidate and a conservative stance, you know, by that candidate, and just decided to bury any realistic view of the last 8 years and before that, and what's led up to this point, and the need for a political alternative that you have to mark down with your vote, and you have to mark down with your energy and with your money and so on. And again, that's a process. So by being tough on the voters that voted for the two corporate candidates, by being tough on the voters that voted for Trump, despite this sort of crude class analysis coming out of that, which is, you know, again, grain of truth in some of it, but there's still, at the end of the day, racism and ignorance, profound ignorance about, I mean, you can't, a protest vote by a worker for a capitalist, that's not a protest vote, I'm sorry. You know, and if you think it was, well, I understand you think it was, I get that. I don't agree with it. I'm going to point out that it was a setback. And but either way, we were between a rock and a hard place in that election, and you had to find a way out. And the way out was, in very limited, narrow confines of U.S. politics, it was a vote for Stein Baraka. It was a vote for something that would help point towards the future of the need for an independent mass left political party for the 99%. So the silver lining, if there is one, again, as we started the show with, there's been massive demonstrations around the country in major cities, many of them initiated by Socialist Alternative, that have put down a marker, yes, Trump, you will be resisted. We don't accept you. We don't accept your administration. We don't accept your policies, and we will fight. And out of that, out of meeting all those people, including people that said the election woke me up, I want to find out more about socialism, I want to find out more about more anti-Trump activities and so on, and not a lot, some, but not a lot of, I'm just doing this waiting for the next election, which is what the Democrats want. Wait for the next election. Wait for the next local elections in 2018, I believe it is, or wait for 2020. And that's what, and they say that every time. And when you get to my age, it gets a little old, to put it mildly, to hear that every time. Wait for the next Democratic Party savior. And then that there's no such thing. There's no Democratic Party savior, because they believe in the system. They believe in the same austerity measures. Cornel West, who at times has been a little, in my opinion, wishy-washy on the Democrats, sometimes he'll support them, which I think is a mistake, but in many other ways he's quite perceptive and radical and so on, and does fight for independent politics from time to time. Cornel West was interviewed by Black Agenda Report and said, well, what about all these people that just vote knee-jerk for the Democrats? And he said something like, getting off the neoliberal, time to get off the neoliberal crack, or something like that. Don't quote me. Check it out yourself. Go to Black Agenda Report and listen to their podcast and check out their essays and so on. But yeah, that's if I got that quote right, because I got it secondhand, that's true. That's absolutely right. You know, we can't dance around the fact that people are voting against their class interests, that people are voting, some people are voting in racist ways, and we have to confront them hard on that stuff. You know, and I don't care if I turn somebody off at first. Hopefully I've left a seed, you know, a seed behind in their mind, a little spark of something that's, oh, well, wait a minute, that's a guy that didn't, you know, when something happens later from Trump and company, or from the local Democrats, or from the next Democratic Party administration, they'll remember that argument, that there is an alternative, that someone felt strongly that it was wrong to vote for Trump and wrong to vote for Clinton. And there's something, there's a movement out there trying to build a political alternative for working people. Now, along those lines, we have a new issue of Socialist Alternative's newspaper out called Socialist Alternative. And it actually came out just after the election, so it is very, very relevant to the election analysis, which we've built on. Go to socialistalternative.org to read more about the elections. And this is November 2016 issue. I think it'll go over into December a little bit. But I just want to check out a few things in the new issue of Social Alternative. We have this continuing section of the paper or article in the paper called Why I Am a Socialist. And they're usually really, really good. I mean, I'm really, really impressed by how people new to Socialist Alternative can articulate so well why they got involved, you know. And I read them also because, you know, these are working people. These are very young people, usually working or young or both, talking about this in a public forum, our newspaper. And I read them out on the air because they're short, but I also read them out because you have to understand, you, meaning you, as a working person or as a young person, you can be a socialist. You can get involved with Socialist Alternative. You can get involved in the anti-Trump rallies. You don't need, if you hear me use a big word or something like U.S. imperialism or something, you don't need to understand totally what that is. You need to want to find out what that is. You need to, you know, try to find out. You don't have to have a college degree. You don't have to have, there are people in Social Alternative that didn't graduate from high school, and they're extremely intelligent and extremely, and very good organizers and very good members of Social Alternative. So, you know, all this alternative information and all this analysis, it's not just for the sake of it, and then everyone sits back and calmly makes up their mind, weighing up the different options. No, this is a little modest little radio show, completely on a very weak signal, and buried in the vast corners of the internet, versus a corporate media onslaught that is a drumbeat every day of whatever it is they decide is the way to go. And right now, it's rally around Trump, disgustingly enough. So we don't have a... And the newspaper we put out, although it's doing well, it's paying for itself, it's got a wider and wider circulation, we're not under the illusion that these alternative sources of information on their own make or break a situation. We have a sense of humility, you know, a sense of proportion about what we're doing. But what happens is, and this comes from the methodology of Marxism, is that we believe that experience, the experience of capitalism in a weak phase, and some people call late capitalism, meaning it's on its way out, which I hope is the case, that people's experience allow them or make them or compel them to question the system more, even before they might hear a questioning of the system. System being capitalism and all the political edifice over it, of the two-party system in the United States and so on, experience, like something like the election happening, will propel people, as they have in their, to a lot of people, to check out Socialist Alternative and other political alternatives. That there was experience in that election that made them do that. You know, that unfortunately, and the experience comes at a hard price with economic decline in this country, and every little uptick where people get a little hope and then their hopes are dashed again, that will educate people as much as if we can get them to read about the alternative and get them to hear about the alternative. But it actually is ultimately a dialectic. I don't mean to abuse that word too much, but it's a dialectic between what can be done modestly here and there to get out socialist ideas. Like, for example, in Seattle right now, with the election of Shama Sawant and the re-election of Shama Sawant, socialist ideas get out more to a wider portion of the population than probably anywhere else in the country. And that has an effect, good effect overall politically. Now, does that mean it's only nice sailing over there in Seattle for socialism? No. I mean, there, Shama Sawant, a member of Social Alternative and current Seattle City Councilor, got elected and reelected, is under fire for calling for protests against Trump's election. And there's going to be big protests January 20th. Hopefully school walkouts in cities all around the country, high schools and colleges. And if you're hearing about it for the first time, please do whatever you can to organize a walkout in your high school, in your college, to fight Trump. That's Inauguration Day, January 20th. January 21st, there's going to be a Million Women's March I've read about. I hope that continues to get organized for. I hope that happens. That's a really big step forward. There's a lot going on that even with the sort of probable break of the holidays, There's a lot going on, you know, soon after that, MLK Day in January and so on. There will be opportunities to fight back against Trump, initiated by Socialist Alternative in some cases, and in many cases not, of course. And you should get in touch with socialistalternative.org to find out more about these opportunities to fight against Trump. But part of the fight against Trump, again, is that enough people, and who knows what the magic number is, and enough people that are conscious revolutionary socialists meeting up with enough people to influence them, to question the system, to see ways out, to organize themselves as working people, whether, you know, again, I'm using working people in the general sense, not in the sense of the corporate media. Working people is really mostly women, a lot of people of color, and everybody, regardless of racial categorization or ethnic type, that has to work for a living in a high percent, it has to try to sell their labor, a high percentage of that social class, working class, will be obviously affected by and learn something by conditions. And where they can intersect with a group like ours, the Socialist Alternative, and the ideas we put forward, even the ideas we put forward in this modest radio show, then there'll be more people. And it tends to grow exponentially. It's not just a 1+1 arithmetic increase in class consciousness or struggle or campaigns or whatever. Things tend to burst forward exponentially, go into retreat again at a certain point, but then go forward again. And you know, there's a point where the system will be so obviously wrong to enough people, not everybody, but to enough people, that if there are people out there organizing a fight back, if there are people organizing a new political party for working people, organizing a big mass movements around issues that affect working people, then there will be change. So anyway, Why I'm a Socialist by Sheila Check from Fayetteville, Arkansas. Now, that's one reason I'm reading this. Yes, there are socialists in Arkansas. And yes, there is a branch of Socialist Alternative in Arkansas. And if people in Arkansas can find Socialist Alternative, anyone can. Because as you know, Arkansas is a bit of a backwater in terms of the general politics that the corporate media reports out on, and what actually the, you know, class struggle is produced in terms of Arkansas. Although every state has a hidden history of working class struggle and anti-racist struggle that's very enlightening and motivating. But it's hard to find out. But anyway, this is a Sheila Check, Why I'm a Socialist, why she joined Socialist Alternative. Quote, the first time I truly experienced the extreme disparity between rich and poor was during childhood trips to my mother's country, the Philippines. The Philippines was, and still is, two separate countries. The version for the wealthy and powerful is a consumer playground of beach resorts, mega malls, and mansions. On the other hand, the Philippines of the poor and disaffected is a country where hard, honest work fails to keep families financially secure. When I came back home from my family vacations, this perception of a stark contrast stuck with me. At first, I assumed that such a division could not happen here. After all, I live in the United States, an economically developed democracy, and the richest country in the world. But the disparity existed here, too. When I came of age in the late 1980s, lifestyles of the rich and famous was juxtaposed against the recession. I understood that my generation would be the first to be worse off financially than its parents. I could not believe how many politicians proudly endorsed the deregulation of financial institutions, leaving their constituents without any protection. I felt disenfranchised, although I could see through capitalism's empty promises. I was not equipped to do much of anything about it myself at that time. Recessions exposed the old American compact of financial reward and security to anyone who worked hard and earned a college degree as an empty promise. Too many corporate employers, an applicant with a master's degree was now a red flag, and academia was no longer able to employ those seeking teaching jobs. Low national unemployment percentages belie the true situation today. Millions of Americans are severely underemployed. The free market, and she has free in quotes here, has been utterly unable to efficiently put to use the talents and education of millions of Americans. Prosperity under capitalism is neither lasting nor universal. This system rewards neither learning nor hard work, and the destructive effects of consumer capitalism are everywhere, not just in the U.S. and the Philippines. No one should have to struggle to get their needs met. Everyone deserves to have dignity and equality, and everyone should be empowered to exercise agency. Socialism is the only system offering real solutions to the world we live in today. The true question is not, why am I a socialist? It is, why aren't more people socialists? So again, that was Sheila Cech explaining why she's a socialist, why she's in Socialist Alternative. I thought it was really good. Also, in this new issue of Socialist Alternative, a lot of stuff on the elections. We need mass resistance to Trump and a new party, the 99%. I just got into some of those issues. By the way, on the question of prediction of the election, maybe not the most important question, I think it's more important to have an analysis that takes into account the mood of the people in general. An analysis of the institutions running candidates, of the candidates themselves. I think Social Alternative did a very good job on that. And we never publicly said, well, one person's going to win over another. But if you read us carefully, a little hint that probably Clinton was going to win. I personally thought Clinton was going to win. I'll explain my personal reasoning for that. I saw the ruling class, most of the ruling class, or a big powerful section of it at least, lining up behind Clinton, even fairly early on. That meant tons of PAC money, tons of money coming in the Clinton administration. At the same time, I'm hearing stuff about Trump is ignoring traditional sources of fundraising and ignoring the so-called ground game. The ground game means you take the money you get in a campaign. Now, if it's Shama Sawan, Social Alternative, the money's coming from workers and from a little bit from unions and so on. You're taking that money and you're putting it into people to go door to door, people to make phone calls, people to set up information tables and help people register to vote and find out more about the candidate. A lot of grassroots stuff that goes along with elections, right? Even in the U.S. And that's a good way to spend money if you're a left-wing candidate. Very good way, because you're also getting out ideas. You're talking to working people. It's one of the reasons why electoral politics should not be ignored by the left, and why we don't ignore it in Social Alternative. We see electoral politics as a place to campaign for socialist ideas and to meet people that might be interested in socialism and our organization, and to put forward policies that, if we can build a movement around them like we have in Seattle, we can actually gain things for working people, like the $15 minimum wage law in Seattle that was passed after Shama got elected and was a big part of Shama Sawant's campaign. And the campaign by Socialist Alternative for Shama Sawant. So basically, you have a situation where money usually results in some sort of ground game, quote unquote. Again, I don't like that phrase, I'm just going to use it for shorthand here. That door-to-door stuff, the grassroots stuff, the phone calling, the pouring over the voting rolls and figuring out who to call and where they live and all this other stuff. So, and I did some of that for the Shama Sawant campaign. I was there for a week, and it's effective. It's important. It increased Shama's vote the more of a ground game we had, you know. Now, we didn't have the money the corporate candidates had, but we made up for it with socialist determination, we'll call it in shorthand, and enthusiasm and so on. So anyway, so I'm told through the corporate media mostly, but even through other sources I read and heard about that, you know, Trump has no ground game and it's really just Hillary has the ground game. So from that, I thought, given the money coming in from a big section of the ruling class and all the endorsements from generals and all that, that brings money with it too. Generals and media barons, media bosses, big capitalists, you know, Warren Buffett supported Clinton, you know, that kind of thing. That Clinton was going to win because of that. Because that was going to give enough money for campaign infrastructure that Trump wasn't even really, it seemed like, that interested in. Now, what happened to me in my analysis was, on that, speaking personally, that I couldn't see that Trump did have a ground game, that the Republican parties, and I did hear a little bit about this, but didn't take it that seriously, the Republican parties in certain places, even where the Trump campaign didn't fill out a ground game, they filled one out. So the day after the election, there was some politician talking about New Hampshire, some Trump politician, they knocked on 100,000 doors up there, you know? I had no idea. The reports I was getting about canvassing and so on in New Hampshire and other places was of Hillary supporters going around. So I really didn't have a good picture of that ground, the so-called ground game of the two campaigns. And if I had a inkling of the ground game for Trump, as uneven as it might have been, I'm still researching that, but let's say it was uneven and not, and still inferior to Clinton's overall, which I believe, because I think Clinton might have raised more money overall, then I would say that I would change my prediction. I would say, based on the mood, based on how Clinton was campaigning, that Trump could have won, whereas I really said most likely Clinton's going to win. And I don't feel bad about that, because a lot of that analysis of the mood, I feel bad about Trump winning and Clinton winning. I would have felt bad about that too. But what I'm trying to say is my personal analysis, which flows mostly from Social Alternative, or totally from Social Alternative perhaps, is, you know, that a lot of that analysis was accurate, but missed this key point of the ground game, you know, that the Republicans apparently were able to throw up at certain points. And I'd like to learn more about that, actually. I know where I'm from originally, in upstate New York, I got a glimpse in outside the cities of the Republicans' own version of, you know, the ground game. And I was active even as a teenager in city politics in that area, but I could see what was happening in the rural areas and semi-rural areas that, the Republicans did have, unfortunately, and again, unfortunately, the Democrats have this too. But had and I wasn't campaigning for Democrats back then. I was still campaigning, even back when I was really young, for independent candidates, left-wing, progressive independent candidates. But the Republicans did have their own version of nepotism when they got in power. Like Trump is demonstrating that. Their own version of using hiring, firing, and state positions to give people jobs, patronage. Republicans have patronage. Republicans have nepotism. Republicans have, you know, some sort of activism out there, as weird as that sounds and as disgusting as that is. They've got that. They got that stuff, and that should not be ignored. Now, you know, counter arguments to what I was, the way I was thinking was, you know, oh, you're not putting enough emphasis on TV and on face, you know, social media and all that. Well, no, I'm not de-emphasizing those things. That's where the money also goes, right? I mean, all those ads in the days before the election, it was just like you could watch literally, you know, ad after ad right in a row, one from Trump, one from Clinton, blah, 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 you know? And the ruling class, two different wings of the ruling class beating up on each other. Again, that's nothing new in a basic way. However, extra nasty and racist and crappy and ignorant Trump is, again, there have been other Trumps. And the idea that the ruling class is totally united in how to rule is just not there. There's oftentimes that they have differences, and that doesn't help us, but necessarily. But those differences are there, and tactics and so on. And to say also that working people and the socialist movement and so on can't have more than one enemy at a time politically is foolish. You know, so again, I don't mean to repeat that point, but every time I make a point about how horrible Trump is, again, I don't want you to translate that into support for that we're calling for support for Clinton, or that Clinton is somehow sane or something. Clinton has her own, and the Democratic Party has its own version of insanity, which is defined as defensive capitalism, despite all the evidence about what it's doing to the planet and to people, that the Republicans have. You know, even if, like, I'll give you an example on the environment. It's a good one to study. Like, the other day, the Obama administration did something progressive regarding Antarctic pipeline drilling, right? Now, two things. There was actually a lot of push against that prior to the election, right? You probably didn't hear about it, but there was. There was, like, protests and stuff against it prior to the election. And for every step forward with either Republican or Democratic administration, you're going to have 20 steps backwards. So on the environment, that's very, very true. So if you look at the whole environmental record of the Obama administration, it's horrific, you know, support of fracking and all that, you know. And if you, you know, and when Clinton was running, she didn't embrace the Dakota pipeline, no Doppel movement. Let me get that straight. I kind of, you know, I'm really into that movement and no Doppel, and I messed that up. Dakota Access Pipeline. So, you know, neither corporate candidate endorsed the No Dapple movement. Neither corporate candidate, like I said earlier, endorsed Black Lives. I mean, there's a point at which they will not go. There's some places they will not go, you know, unless forced really, really heavily by a mass movement and by an alternative political party. A lot of times when I say on the show, the key, and even Bernie Sanders said this at times, I don't think he really meant it, but in terms of any type of organizing, but the key to putting forward the key to, like, having mass movements, being able to mitigate and actually reverse horrible policies of administrations, conservative or liberal, is extremely important to understand. But I also don't want that to seem like, oh, all we're saying is you have to run out and protest. Oh, you have to run out and protest in certain ways, and there's different tactics to protest. And the strongest protests are ones that have an economic basis, like mass general strikes or mass plant or workplace occupations. But also, a lot of that pressure can come from the development of a third, in our case, a third political party or a political party from the left. For example, again, and I say again because we've used this on the show before, in Canada, right to the north of here, not too far away, in 1964, left-wing groups, community groups, unions, they put forward the formation of a new party called the New Democratic Party. And that doesn't mean anything about like U.S. Democrats. This was a left-wing sort of social democratic party. And its main thing was to get universal health care for Canadians. And they never took power nationally to this day. They have had power in some provinces, but very quickly they were, that pressure, plus a mass movement, was able to achieve a national healthcare system in Canada, much, much better than healthcare in this country, and up there among the best healthcare systems in the world. Again, not based on profit and the private market and all that, but based on everyone has a right to healthcare. And this left-wing party, was pushing for that, and even though they never got elected fully around, except for in certain provinces, it got pushed through. So anyway, jumping back, we're running out of time to the new issue of Socialist Alternative. Big article, we need a mass resistance to Trump and a new party with 9%. You can read these articles also at socialistalternative.org. There's a new publication from Socialist Alternative, The Failure of Lesser Evilism, Why Fighting the Right Means Building a New Party of the 99%. There's also a new publication on Black Liberation, a booklet. Also in this, there is mention of the mass protests, the ones that happened right after the election. There were more after that, and they were huge. And the follow-up meetings to the protests that Socialist Alternative has organized have been huge. So not only do you get like more people than you expected at the rallies, but you get more people at the follow-up meetings than you expected. So Socialist Alternative is getting a lot more interest and is growing right now. That might not last. Again, we talked earlier in the show, some of the stuff Trump's going to put forward could really shock people, demoralize people. There's already a section of, of a sort of liberal activists that are demoralized, kind of lost their analysis. They're going to double down on the Democratic Party, which is going to be a demoralizing thing to do. And they're going to, the worst of them, sort of probably most, for the most part, the richer ones are going to be like, you have to somehow accommodate to the Trump administration. And they're making noises about that. And of course, we reject that completely. That's a losing strategy from the get-go and one that is abhorrent, basically. Good article on the BLM, Black Lives Matter, Boycott, Injustice, the Next Stage in the Struggle, by Jess Speer and Stephen Kemmerle, in the new paper. Just really quickly on the first paragraph, quote, racism permeates every pore of U.S. society. That is not new. What is new is the growing awareness and increased determination to fight against racism, particularly among the millennial generation 18 to 35. Over the past 2 years, the Black Lives Matter movement, through ongoing protests, marches, and major rebellions in Ferguson and Baltimore, has shaken U.S. society. And there's the rest of the article is about the question of a boycott has been raised. And there's, under Trump, another thing that we haven't talked about yet, and there is a lot to talk about. It's not necessarily, there's some, overarching trends and facts that make a lot of sense that are not that hard to figure out in some ways. But then there's things you have to sort of follow the line and figure out where the path is leading. If you notice, a lot of police unions supported Trump. They thought Trump would give them a license to move, to keep doing what they were doing. Now, again, Clinton didn't challenge them on this in any real way, and defended the police when confronted with questions about certain police murders and so on. Now, obviously, a lot of cop unions are now emboldened by Trump getting elected, which means obviously they're going to, despite the big movement of Black Lives Matter and so on, they're probably going to try to get around that, over that, crush that, and just move back to terrorizing, especially black youth, but also other people. and also continue the militarization of the police, and that's going to be a disaster. There's a correlation between that, of course, and the weakness and of capitalism at this point, and the more questioning of inequality and so on, that, you know, any capitalist system, and it's true of class society in general, not just capitalism, when threatened, they increase usually the military response, or the response of violence, coercive violence, which in our case in the U.S. is mostly police, but also National Guard, and also the line between that the line that used to be there, or so-called there, using U.S. troops in domestic political disagreements and battles and so on, is being erased. There's a big article on the 60th anniversary of the Montgomery bus boycott, which is very relevant to the boycott idea being put forward by Black Lives Matter, by some sections of Black Lives Matter. By the way, that Resist Trump article is not just an afterthought. It is a thread that runs through. It's like three pages, at least two pages, running through the paper. And I'll just read a really quick thing. Undemocratic outcome. Donald Trump won the Electoral College, the only vote that counts in American presidential elections, based mostly on a winner-take-all state-by-state system. However, the popular vote was won by Hillary Clinton. It is an absurd throwback that the U.S. is still using an election procedure which was based on the quote-unquote founding fathers' desire to maintain a check on popular sovereignty. In the original Constitution, senators were elected by state legislatures for the same anti-democratic reason. It is long overdue. Abolish the Electoral College. This is, again, from Socialist Alternatives' new issue of the paper, of their paper, our paper. A presidency of chaos and struggle. This is the last few paragraphs of the article on Resist Trump and Build a New Party. The election of Trump is a disaster, which will have many negative consequences, but it is also a phase in the ongoing process of political and social upheaval in the U.S. Capitalism and its institutions are discredited as perhaps never before, a process that continued right through the end of the general election, with the FBI interjecting itself into the political process and Trump relentlessly talking about the rigged political system. There will inevitably be widespread despair in sections of the left and a feeling that all attempts to move society forward are useless. It is absolutely essential to push back against this mood. Real change comes from the bottom up, from mass movements in the workplaces and the streets. Trump's victory represents, quote, the whip of counter-revolution, unquote. This has happened before many times in the history of capitalism. It's not just like, oh, there's always a regime out there in this country or others that has a progressive veneer on it and betrays that. No. There's sometimes regimes that are straight up, we're going to come in and do damage to you. And it turns out to be less or more than the so-called the regime of the progressive face, depending on the mass movement opposing it, if there is one or not, and how big it is and so on. So there will be chaos under Trump. There will be provocations. And these will impel millions into defensive action. This is why those who have been radicalized in the past period must redouble their efforts to build a real mass movement for change, independent of corporate control. The social movements of recent years, especially Black Lives Matter, show the potential. But it is also essential to see that Trump will inevitably disappoint his supporters. Quote, building a wall, unquote, will not create a million jobs, millions of good jobs to replace those lost to automation and trade deals. And although he talks about investing in 21st century infrastructure, Trump is also committed to even further mass tax breaks for billionaires like himself. A mass movement against Trump will need to appeal directly to the white working class and explain how we can create a future where all young people can have a decent future, rather than trying to recreate the, quote, American dream, unquote, by deepening racial division. Such a future can only be achieved, a decent future can only be achieved with socialist policies. So that was a pretty good ending to that article. And, again, socialistalternative.org. Get a subscription to the paper, Social Alternative, whatever. I don't have time to go into this much, but on counterpunch.org, a website we've mentioned on the show before, there's some good stuff on there, including an article by Shama Swan. She's been published a few times on counterpunch.org now. Shama, again, the Social Alternative member and elected and re-elected member of the Seattle City Council as an open socialist currently in Seattle. Now listen to this. In the 10 days since the election, quoting Shama, several thousand people have phoned and emailed my Seattle City Council office in a fury over my call to shut down Donald Trump's agenda and massive peaceful protests on Inauguration Day. Many messages were from middle and working class people who had voted for Trump because they hated corporate Democrats and Hillary Clinton and mistakenly believed that Trump was going to stand up for ordinary Americans. Many were also racist and misogynist, saying things like, well, I can't read these things on the air, really, but you can understand. Drop dead and go back to Turbanville, they said to Sharma, because she's from India and they assume she's Muslim or something. Call after call. While having zero tolerance for bigotry and threats, my staff patiently explained to the more reasonable Trump supporters that we agree working people have been sold out by corporate politicians, that we completely oppose the bipartisan big business policies of free trade like TPP and NAFTA, corporate tax handouts, and the close ties of both parties to Wall Street. Callers were surprised to learn that while I fiercely opposed Trump, I did not back Hillary Clinton. I campaigned for Bernie Sanders and later Jill Stein. Many were simply not reachable as they spewed hate on all those protesting their president-elect. They will have to experience Donald Trump's policies in office to see for him what he is, a con man and representative of the billionaire class who sold the lie that he will bring back the, quote, American dream, unquote. So anyways, it's a good article. You know, she gets into how she's personally felt being targeted from Trump supporters and the bigotry and the racism as a part of that. But that there is ways to fight back. Obviously, and already people have started that with the mass Trump rallies that have happened. And don't be discouraged if you're anti-Trump like we are. Don't be discouraged that if there's not every night a rally of tens of thousands of people or hundreds of people in smaller cities. There's no way people can just be on the street all the time. You know, there's just got to be. You got to go to work. You got to try to find work. You got to go to school. You got to do your, you know, you just got to survive, you know. And we're not, you know, people are not able to sustain these protest movements for a long, long amount of time. However, January 20th, prepare for January 20th. Inauguration day. There's going to be protests in Washington, there's gonna be protests in cities all around the country. Find that protest in your city. Get involved. If you're a student, a high school student or college student, walk out of class. At a certain point, maybe around noon, walk out of class, find a place to rally with the different schools. And what we're going to try to do in Worcester is have a student walk out, plus have a place to rally, plus have a place a little later to rally for students and working people that can get out of work. And if worse comes to worse, and there isn't a big reaction to this, if people don't take up the call to protest on inauguration day, January 20th, then we will be out there with a standout, with a significant amount of people with signs and so on, pointing out to passersby in their cars and so on that Trump is not our president, we don't support Trump, and we have to fight back to anything emanating from the Trump administration, whether it's policies to help the rich and shameless and powerful, or policies that embolden the far right, or rhetoric that emboldens the far right to attack people. Finally, on just a shout out to another article on Counterpunch. This one weaves in and out, kind of too long and so on, but it's worth checking out. Jeffrey St. Clair has been publishing series of essays under the title Roaming Charges, and then different titles after that. And this one is When the Paradoxals Came Home to Roost. And that is published November 18th. And he goes into like how overconfident the powers that be behind Clinton, I mean the rich, the Henry Kissingers and all those, were about Clinton. How part of Clinton's campaign and part of that judgment came from, quote, one of the trademarks of neoliberalism is that the working poor are to be blamed for their own desperate condition. Their failure to adapt to the shock therapy foisted upon them, their refusal to embrace the austere strictures of the new modernity. Stuff about the Democratic Party, and in rationalizing the defeat, at least in terms of the Electoral College. Each day a new scapegoat emerges. James Comey, Vladimir Putin, Julian Assange, Jill Stein, Gary Johnson, Anthony Weiner, rigged voting machines, Fox News, Bernie Brothers, even Bernie Sanders himself, the man who debased himself by campaigning his ass off for a candidate who ridiculed him behind his back and then blamed him for unpredictable demise. And if it's Friday, it must be Susan Sarandon's fault for being one of the few celebrities, quote unquote, with a conscience and the courage to articulate it. See the online ravings about her, by Paul Krugman and others. Then he goes on to, dissect the Clinton, campaign a little more from the standpoint of its its arrogance, basically. And how horrible Trump will be, and that it wasn't, so-called third parties that cost the election. There were many more Democrats that swung over to support Trump, and some facts about that that are available in other places as well. So, you know, yeah, they're looking for the liberals, the hardcore Clinton supporters. They're looking for scapegoats. They don't understand the idea that people want to move beyond the system. People want to move at least beyond the electoral system as it exists, if not full-fledged socialism. And they want to support the system, but with their candidate in charge, that's not enough. That's not going to work. That's not going to stop the right, even. You're not going to stop. You know, in the protests that I've been on against Trump and the ones I've read about, either organized by Social Alternative or others, there aren't too many of the people that you ended up arguing with on Facebook or in your workplace about Hillary Clinton out there protesting. That's not who protests. It's not the upper middle class liberal pundits. And it's not even the ones that are so tied to Clinton and the Democrats that they were stunned by this that are out there for the most part. There are some Hillary supporters out there. But for the most part, it's people that were woken up by the election, that they're making a deeper analysis, deeper than the horse race, deeper than the ping pong game of Republican, Democrat, Democrat, Republican, every 8 years, vote for another party, but they're the two corporate parties, blah, blah, blah. People have seen through that a certain layer. Yes, as I just read a few moments ago, there will be people that are stunned by what happened, but there's a certain layer that's seeing beyond it already. As moving forward, join them on the streets to protest Trump. Go to meetings about how to protest Trump, and most importantly, in the short term, January 20th, student walkout, high schools, colleges, workplace if you can swing it. Bring it up in your union if you're in a union. That January 20th is an organization. We should be out protesting that day. And January 21st, hopefully, from what I've heard, there's going to be a million women's march in Washington to support the obvious misogynist and sexist policies of the Trump campaign and most likely the Trump administration. And be there, too, if you can get down to Washington for that. And maybe there will be satellite protests like the one on Inauguration Day in different cities. So thanks for listening. You've been listening to Socialist Alternative Radio. We're going to go out with some music. We really appreciate the feedback on Socialist Alternative Radio page on Facebook. It's been, as you can imagine, a big jump in people checking out our page since Trump got elected and people, again, saying, the election woke me up. I want to find out more about you, Socialist Alternative. I want to find out about alternatives to this system that either way, sooner or later, hurts working people in the general sense and specifically targeting right now people of color, part of the working class, targeting youth. And we need to be out there with, yes, defensive struggles, but also we can even make gains during a Trump administration because people are waking up about the nature of the system and are going to get serious about protesting and serious about organizing. Then we are going to actually be able to shut down Trump and put forward $50 minimum wage, movements that we're doing in different cities like Minneapolis and so on, and put forward demands that will actually win better living standards for working people in general, even during a Trump administration. And anyway, we'll get more into that analysis and how to get rid of Trump or how to neutralize Trump in the short, medium, long term. Thanks for listening to Socialist Alternative Radio. And we'll go out with Tom Morello, I think it is. Yeah. No, actually, we're going to go out with our theme song, one of our theme songs. Sky.